welcome to Stay Cool Forever,
the podcast where we are dissecting 90s films and looking at them from the future to see how they size up. Are they timeless? Are they still good? Is there problems in them? And how influential were they to subsequent movies?
And this month we've done Oscar-worthy movies.
From famous directors who are still relevant, we are doing Pulp Fiction, 1994, Quentin Tarantino.
All right. And before we get deep into it, for all of our listeners out there, thank you for listening. If you got any questions, comments, concerns, fuck yous, send it to staycoolforever@gmail.com, and that's four as in F-O-U-R, staycoolforever@gmail.com. You can listen to us on Pippa, Podma, Stitcher, Google Play, Bose apparently, iTunes, Spotify, YouTube, and I think that should be all the places. Also, if you guys like what we got going on, check us out on Patreon. Give us a little donation, maybe. We got some fun stuff in there. We're thinking about doing other podcasts about other things.
We'll start plugging those as they come along. I know you got a Star Trek in the works.
True, yeah. Myself and David, former star of this podcast, are doing a Star Trek podcast as well. You know, if you do get on Patreon, you know, send us what kind of special content you would like. You know, or email us.
Yeah. If you have any suggestions, please let us know.
Yeah. All right. So you want to just get into it?
Yeah, let's dive in.
All right.
So we've both seen this movie a couple times. It's kind of a cult classic.
Yes. I've seen it probably 100 times.
Okay. I've seen the first half probably 100 times.
Sure.
This is definitely one of those movies that, it's, you know, clocks in at about 2.5 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the more memorable fun scenes are definitely from like the first, you know, first two acts. So I kind of realized watching it this time, like, oh, wow, once it gets to the Bruce Willis segment for the gold watch, I kind of am less familiar with it.
Yeah, the whole movie takes a turn. And it's at that point when they do the catch up from the first scene with Honey Bunny and Pumpkin. That's kind of when that turn happens. But yeah, I fucking love this movie. I used to go to bed to it.
Mm-hmm. And that's what I mean by you see the first parts before the last, because it's one of those movies you want to put on because you remember it being great, but maybe you don't have the whole 2.5 to get through it.
Yeah, I forgot it was 2.5 hours. Mm-hmm. When I was watching it yesterday, I was wondering, is this still going? When are they going to wrap this up? Because I know what happens.
Mm-hmm.
I'm waiting for things to happen. But it seemed that there was so much filler time. But all important. But it seemed filler. Because I haven't seen it in so long, I totally forgot about the wolf.
Oh, yeah. I kind of did, too.
Yeah, fucking Harvey Keitel shows up. Off the top, what's your favorite scene?
I mean, the Vincent and Mia date was a lot of fun.
Yes.
It was just done really well, stylish. They really commit to the kind of, you know, fun, hip dialogue. It's very cool. And that is one of the scenes where I felt like they really committed to it. And even if it felt silly at times, it was just fun because it was like different.
It was just fun. And there is a sense of hip to it
The
whole way through. Do you know the theory about Fox Force 5?
Well, you go ahead and tell me. I think I do.
Sure. So, you know, the theory about Quentin Tarantino is that all of the movies happen in the same universe.
Yes.
So they're all interrelated.
Mm-hmm.
And so her anecdote about Fox Force 5 is actually Kill Bill.
Yeah, all the lady assassins from that fit the descriptions of the five girls.
Exactly.
Yep.
Exactly. I think the one movie that is a standalone from this Quentin Tarantino verse, but someone managed to dig through Django and find the singular moment when it's tied into the same universe.
It's like an ancestor of
there's
Vincent
like
Vega or something.
A line item name in something in Django, and it is just probably Vincent Vega's great great grandfather or something like that.
That's interesting. On that interrelated note, I was reading, apparently the guy from Reservoir Dogs, I believe Michael Madsen plays the character, the you know, stuck in the middle with you where he's pouring gasoline on the guy.
Yeah.
That is supposedly Vincent Vega's brother.
Oh!
Like, he's credited with the same last name, and Tarantino talked about wanting to do a team-up movie with the, you know, two of them, but,
you know,
Vincent dies in Pulp Fiction, and they're both, like, way too old for a prequel now, but that's another one of those crossovers in the Tarantino-verse.
Yes. Do you like Quentin Tarantino?
Absolutely.
Okay. Do you have a favorite Tarantino movie?
This one probably was one of my favorites, but now I really just want to rewatch Inglourious Basterds,
sure.
Hateful Eight, and Django.
Okay.
I think, like, the Kill Bills were good and interesting, but it's a different kind of experience.
I agree.
Going straight kung fu for two full-length movies. It's, like, harder to peg that as a favorite. Do you have a favorite?
This was my favorite until Inglourious Basterds came out.
Yeah.
Inglourious Basterds is the best movie ever made.
It's funny to see his evolution, too, because I watched this one a lot, but having seen the others, that he's definitely matured and progressed as a director.
He's putting out more artsy, if you will, films.
Mm.
Less ones that are the Tarantino style.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, he kind of keeps some of his tricks, but phases out maybe some of the kitschier or, less prestigious ideas. And that's something I loved about this one, is it's so full of irrelevant stuff that's just there to develop the characters. Like,
mm-hmm.
they are criminals with very interesting lives and high-stakes things happening around them, but most of the time you spend with them is just talking about irrelevant stuff and getting to know them, which is kind of fun and, like, a little rare.
That's my favorite part about older Tarantino movies, is the... It's conversation. Everything's conversation-based. It's everyday sort of situations where they're having heavy talks about, life or religion or things like that. And that's what drew me to Reservoir Dogs. Mixed in with all the gruesome violence and, the torture, is they're at lunch, brunch, eating food, same way in Pulp Fiction as well. I think to that point, though, when you're saying that he has progressed, the movies changed when Sally Mankey, the editor, died. He had only used Sally Mankey.
Up to what movie?
2010. So okay. I don't know what movie that is, but I think that means Inglourious Basterds, Django.
Everything post Hateful Eight, probably.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
And that's why it kind of changes. There's a little bit of a shift there, and that's why one reason why the Tarantinoists don't like Django and things like that, because they're not the same movie, because Sally Mankey's not editing it.
Mm-hmm. I could understand that. There's the earlier work definitely has more of that grindhouse,
you know,
soundtrack reliant. There's like old film techniques, kind of throwback elements in the editing. So maybe that was kind of her bag, and whoever the new guy is a little more professional.
A little more Spielberg, a little less Richard Rodriguez.
Yeah. Did you know that Robert Rodriguez directed the scenes with Quentin Tarantino as Jimmy?
Oh, really?
Because he, didn't want to direct himself, and those guys worked on From Dusk Till Dawn.
Wow. No, I had no idea.
Yeah, they've been pretty close. I don't know if you saw The Grindhouse, Death Proof.
I watched it in theaters.
Same.
Which was just an awesome experience.
Yeah, it was a long ride.
It was a long ride, but they had intermission commercials, like you were at a real drive-in. Do you remember that?
Yeah, with like the grainy old school film, and it looked real dated.
That's a fun exercise.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen the El Rey channel? That's Robert Rodriguez. I called him Richard earlier. That's Robert Rodriguez's channel.
Mm-mm.
And it focuses on horror, kung fu, old cowboy movies and stuff like that.
Nice.
It's a really out there channel, but if they offered it for $3, $5 a month, I would probably pay for it and just put some shit on.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a lot of fun. Kung fu and violence, man.
Yeah. And obviously that old school grindhouse kind of movie is a clear influence for Tarantino.
Yeah.
Specifically when Butch is samurai swording everyone and he does like the behind stab. I'm like, what?
he knows.
It's fun, but yeah, we're clearly like winking at old movies. Did you have a favorite scene from this?
Well, yeah, actually my favorite scene is when I got the name of the song, because I always forget the name of the song. The Centaurian's Bullwinkle. That's when John Travolta's shooting up. And then he's driving to go pick up Mia.
Yeah.
That song and that scene is my favorite scene in probably a lot of cinema.
Yeah, it really is a beautiful scene.
With the lights dimming and he's just chilling, man. You know,
like the fading
driving,
out.
Smiling, looking around.
Mm-hmm.
Have that feeling that's evoked of you're fucked up in a good way and you're kind of cheesing, if you will. You're just enjoying it. You know that you're the shit in that moment. And then I think it's foreshadowing because it goes very, very wrong.
Yeah.
And something I had paid attention to this time around, remember when he went to pick up the heroin from the dude, when he picked up the madman, and he goes, is it cool if I give it to you in a baggie and not a balloon?
Mm-hmm.
There were so many things that happened word-wise.
If it was a balloon, Mia would have known it was heroin. Yeah.
Yeah. These are things that I didn't pick up on in all of the mm-hmm. years that I've seen this fucking movie. Is I was really trying to match up things that got said or actions that happened that affected what happens later.
Yeah.
Before the time switch in the middle of the movie to the beginning of it.
Because mm-hmm. it feels so conversational. It's not like you're getting a musical cue and a close-up to know this piece of dialogue is important.
Correct.
It just is all kind of there for you to
correct.
You know, watch again and again and catch different things.
To that note, she should have tasted it first and known that it wasn't cocaine. But
agreed.
Not that I've tasted heroin.
But that's what cops do.
Yeah,
you know, they
exactly.
like stab the knife into the bag. Oh, this is good shit. You're going away for a long time.
Exactly. Exactly. So that's one thing that I didn't appreciate. I think that might be the only thing that I didn't appreciate
mm-hmm.
of the movie.
I was going to say, I just appreciated that there were consequences. Because at a point I was like,
yeah.
they're really glamorizing, you know, especially the Vincent doing heroin scene. I'm like, this makes it look so beautiful and
look
cool.
Dope.
But there's a huge fucking consequence for it, which at least I thought was responsible in movie making.
Yeah, actually.
You know,
I agree.
Because we're dealing with criminals and degenerates, and you don't want to, like, glamorize that too much. I mean, we definitely did glamorize it,
yeah.
but there was at least something to...
It's another movie that glamorizes smoking.
Mm-hmm.
It's the 90s, dude.
Yeah.
Let's run through the cast. The cast is pretty much Tarantino. You get the usual suspects, but all fine actors.
That is amazing. You know, Bruce Willis as Butch, who we know from the Die Hards.
In my mind, I have a category here, theories that I didn't work out, but they're just theories that I think there's things that mean things.
All right.
We can go through that later.
Okay. Let's finish off the cast.
Yeah.
We got Sam Jackson from Goodfellas.
Who was he in Goodfellas?
He was the dude that they shot. They, like, shot him in his apartment.
Stacks?
Yeah,
oh,
Stacks.
My God.
They
he was Stacks.
Because I realized... And Uma Thurman was in Beautiful Girls. We're, like, doing some repeats here.
Wow.
On actors.
You know, man, I definitely saw... When I was watching Goodfellas, I thought that was Sam Jackson. And I said to myself, no, it's not. You're just being...
It was such a bit part. It's, like, really easy to pass up. Because
yeah.
obviously we all know who Sam Jackson is. But
oh, man.
We probably didn't all remember that he was in Goodfellas. We got Harvey Keitel as the Wolf.
God bless him.
Let's see. Steve Buscemi, did you catch him in this?
Who was he?
He was the Buddy Holly waiter.
That was Buscemi?
That was Buscemi. My wife missed it, too.
God damn it.
Who we all remember from Fargo, of course. We got Ving Rhames as Marcellus Wallace. John Travolta as Vincent Vega, and Tim Roth and Amanda Plummer as Pumpkin and Honey Bunny. Have I missed anyone?
I can't believe that there are so many repeats in this.
Mm-hmm.
What a fucking time to be alive.
Yeah, I think there's some actors that just get used by certain directors a lot.
For sure. It's for sure all, most of those guys are.
Yeah, like Buscemi has a lot of directors that like to use him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, same with Sam Jackson. Uma Thurman is, you know, Tarantino definitely likes having
yeah.
her in his movies.
My favorite flub of any movie is in Pulp Fiction.
What was the flub?
That's when Sam and Vincent show up to Brett's house.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they identify that he's Brett. And he goes, you're a smart motherfucker, Brett. And then at one point, right before he calls him a smart motherfucker, he says, look at the big brain on Brad.
Mm.
And they kept it in the movie. But his name is fucking Brett.
Yeah.
It's 100% Brett, and everyone goes, look at the big brain on Brad, but it's not Brad.
Hmm.
And it makes me wonder why they kept that in.
I don't know. Maybe because fuck your name? Like,
yeah.
we are in control, so...
It doesn't matter.
Like, maybe, like, you're gonna correct me on this?
Mm-hmm.
You gonna say what again, motherfucker?
What?
Interesting story about Sam Jackson in this movie. Tarantino wanted him for the part. And he still had to audition, and they were apparently very close to putting someone else in his place.
Okay.
Because I guess the studio thought that someone else was better for the part. And then Sam Jackson had to come back in and try a little harder.
Retry.
Yeah.
I have heard a different anecdote that I can't prove. Allegedly, Sam Jackson was a heroin user, and this was his first role out of that hole of heroin.
Hmm. Like at post-rehab?
Yeah.
Back in the game. I never would have thought.
Me either. And so go ahead and fact check that. I don't know. Please. I've heard that.
Yeah.
Speaking
of heroin.
And yeah.
Travolta's consultant for how do I achieve the sensibilities of a person who is high on heroin, he was told to drink a bunch of tequila and take a hot bath.
What?
And that was his research for how to act like someone on heroin.
Whoa.
So don't do heroin, drink tequila and take a hot bath. Stay cool forever.
Stay cool forever. What the fuck does that even... I gotta see what's going on with that.
Yeah, I don't know.
Did you know... So John Ireland, as you know, he does Mason in Ireland. He's also the voice of the Lakers, my favorite regular sports podcast in Los Angeles here. He's a big one percenter over in Manhattan Beach. And he's actually really good friends with Sam Jackson.
Okay.
And they golf all the time. And so listening to their radio show damn near daily, you get anecdotes. And John Ireland refuses to watch Pulp Fiction because he started it and didn't fucking like it and just thinks it's dumb and won't ever watch it. And yet he is buds with Sam Jackson. What does that say about the movie from Sam Jackson's point of view?
That he's offended that a close friend of his wouldn't even watch it?
No, they're still buds. So maybe, do you think Sam Jackson doesn't think highly of the movie or his role? Do you think that's the case?
I don't know. I wonder a lot with actors that they just do a movie and it's a job and they leave it behind them. And you got some people who go to Comic-Con and relish in it and, you know, like a Jean-Luc Picard.
Yeah.
Like Patrick Stewart seems pretty...
We do like a Jean-Luc.
Like, he seems pretty cool with people identifying him as that or Professor X, but when you've done as many movies as Sam Jackson, you can probably just burn him and turn him and...
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
You know, not get hurt if people don't enjoy one movie. I did 5 others this year. I'm worth $80 million. Like,
I definitely feel like he doesn't care.
Yeah.
He's like, hey, whatever, we're still buds.
Dude works.
The dude works.
We could put him in any decade, and there would be, like, dozens of great performances to discuss.
True. My another favorite, if I may, with concerning Sam Jackson, in Snakes on a Plane, you know, he goes, I want these motherfucking snakes off my motherfucking plane. There's a TV edit version.
Yes. And what is the alternate line read that he gives for that?
It's my favorite alternate line read ever. And it's, I want these Monday to Friday snakes off my Monday to Friday plane. Which, if you were to just video me saying Monday to Friday, it looks like motherfucking.
Or does it sound like they had to dub the audio over? Do you think they got 2 takes?
No, yeah, I think they got 2 takes.
Nice.
It's fucking phenomenal. Walken's fucking in it.
Yeah, oh, goddamn. Yeah.
Goddamn.
A gem. Gold watch.
My favorite part of that whole scene is, because we're just going to do favorite. It's crazy how Tarantino and Walken can elucidate a scene of power and meaningfulness until it gets completely trashed by, you know, explaining that the watch was in 2 men's asses for months.
Yeah.
That's fucking amazing.
It's like, and it's all such a long take, you know, monologue. He's talking to this kid who's just dead in the eyes. Like, obviously it stuck with the Butch character because he keeps waking up and the watch is so important to him.
Needs the watch, yeah.
But just that whole monologue, you start with this great story of, you know, heritage and an heirloom.
Yeah.
And then it takes that turn, and he's, you know, right around the time he's, like, getting racist, too.
Yeah.
You know, he's like, and he stuck it up his ass, because he'd be damned if he was going to let some insert derogatory word for whatever war they were in, like, you know, get his hands on that watch. And, like, he was clearly put upon, like, when you're in a situation like me and your father were, you take on certain obligations. If I had died, he would, you know, he'd be talking to my son right now. I hid this uncomfortable hunk of metal up my ass 2 years. 2 years! It's not even for his kid. Like,
it's camaraderie.
Yeah. The way you think of old veterans, or just the older generation, that, like, they're cut from a different cloth, you know?
Sure.
And, like, this is Walken playing that guy to a kid who's clearly unable at that point in his life to get the gravity of it.
Yeah, and just staring at him empty.
But that, like, that's what makes the whole scene so great.
Exactly. So... there are so many bit roles and so many bit scenes in this movie, and yet it tells a complete story. We know who got nominated for Best Supporting and Best Actor.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think those were really the main characters story-wise?
It's hard.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, Act 1 is definitely more for Vincent. You still have Jules along for the ride, but, you know, then he goes on the date with Mia. That takes up significant screen time. And then I guess Act 2 is Bruce Willis's, and then Act 3 is kind of batting cleanup with the Jules. Combination. And, catching back up with them. It really is an ensemble work, though. When you told me that Travolta was nominated for Best Actor, I was like, oh, that's weird. But, like, I think Tarantino's always working with ensemble casts, so when those people get nominated... Christoph Waltz for Django won for Best Supporting Actor.
Who was he in Django?
He was the dude, the guy who, like, helped Django go on his
revenge
mission.
That's right.
But he was basically the lead. Yeah. Got nominated for a supporting, because, like, well, Django's the lead, but we were with his character the whole movie.
Right. I've only seen that movie once.
Same.
Yeah, and in theaters.
Which is why I want to do them all again, because they're long.
You know, we were talking about Patreon stuff. Maybe we do Tarantino.
Yeah, just do the rest.
As a special feature.
Yeah.
Content.
But you gotta pay for it.
Just, you know, just a little bit. You know, just keep us going.
Just a couple grand.
What's a couple grand, guys?
They're gonna break my thumbs.
My favorite Christoph Waltz performance is from Inglourious Basterds, though. Just what a savage.
Reminds me a lot of Ray Fiennes in Schindler.
Sure.
You know, I mean, obviously similar Nazi supervillains.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, he really chewed up the scenery in that role. Which...
Au revoir, Shoshana! As she's leaving the house, she's running away. Mm-hmm. Shoshana was the girl that escaped. And he sees her and just... bids her adieu. Was the little person necessary in Jackrabbit Slims?
I imagine... I didn't get half the references in that scene. You know, I knew, like, Marilyn Monroe and Buddy Holly and...
That's pretty much where it's
from. Who was the guy
me.
Who was hosting the thing? Like,
oh, that was fucking Nixon.
Oh, shit. Okay.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure if that was the the golf comic.
I don't know.
It was just a little too old for me. But I imagine the little person was a reference to some... You know,
something
old
we
show
don't know.
Or something. Yeah, yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, the Asian slurs we didn't need, and Quentin Tarantino's, like, trifecta of the hard R and the N-word.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, this is a similar issue with Goodfellas, where you have a director who is just not shying away from the nature of people being racist, but naturally it's going to turn us off, because it's 2019, and we're not accustomed to, nor appreciative of hearing that shit thrown around casually.
Yeah, it wouldn't... I think it would mar a movie now, but because Pulp Fiction's a cult classic, we're okay with it.
And again, it's just in the context of not too long ago. Like this in Goodfellas, whereas in a Django or something, it's obvious. If you place it in some point in history where racism is like a focal point of, you know, it's a lot easier to digest than just like, oh shit, this person's racist. And the fact that like Sam Jackson's in the scene...
Yeah.
With him, and it's like, okay, what? Like, does this guy get a pass? Is he, like,
well,
really...
that was Sam Jackson's homie.
Mm-hmm.
So, he might have.
Yeah. I don't know.
I don't know. I don't think I would do it now.
Yeah.
That opening... I know we're jumping around here a lot. It's a very Pulp Fiction-style podcast today.
Yeah, the movie is all over the place in time, so...
The fucking opening when they're talking about robbing each other and then robbing the restaurant, and then Pumpkin and Honey Bunny decide that let's just do it here. Let's do it right fucking now. Mm-hmm. And then Honey Bunny stands up and she goes, all right, I'll execute every last fucking one of you. Mm-hmm. And then they drop that fucking surfer rock
Miserly,
cut.
Yeah.
Yep. And then you get the title card of Pulp Fiction show up and then fade it backwards. Every time that shit gets me, it's good.
Yeah, it's just really good style. Like, even I forgot the very beginning gives you definitions of pulp and fiction.
Pulp and fiction.
Then you have that diner conversation with a strong ending, freeze frame, Miserloo, and then just, the old school font, the slow scroll. We do the credits at the beginning of the movie.
Yeah.
Super rare.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's like the throwback to old classic movies. Like,
I think that might play into what's so dope about this movie.
It pumps you up.
Yeah. I mean, because you know you're getting into something great,
mm-hmm.
if that's all you got. On the topic of other fun little movie tricks, when Travolta walks up to meet to the Wallace's house, and he reads the note, and it's in Mia's voice, Awesome.
Yeah.
Just awesome stuff.
A lot of style. I know it didn't work for everybody, but this got 94, 96% on Rotten Tomatoes. So
okay.
There's really no denying.
Have you met someone who doesn't like this movie?
I'm sure I have, but it's probably in that contrarian sense that they associate the movie with jerk-ass film students or pretentious film people.
Really?
And like,
really?
Yeah,
you think
yeah.
so?
No, that's a thing. I've certainly not given movies a fair shake on account of an asshole recommending it to me over and over and not
okay.
shutting up about it.
Yeah.
You know how that goes.
Okay. Yeah. I still think you should watch Star Trek Enterprise.
Oh, man, I bet it's good. No, I'll get there. I got a couple surgeries coming up.
Okay.
Watch them while I recover.
That's great. The square on the screen.
Mm-hmm. Controversial.
What's up with that?
I don't know. Just a little weird to do something else.
Did we need to break the fourth wall? Like, was it a break of the fourth wall? What was that?
I don't know.
What does it say?
Did they see it?
Well, that's what I don't know. So what's the... My favorite part about this movie is, again, another favorite, is that there are things that happen that I just have to consider if there's some extra theory going on.
Hmm.
You know, is there some archetype? Is there some sort of thing that we can shove Mia into that she has that ability to create the square?
Yeah.
I think it's a fun little touch. I don't know if it's necessary. I have some questions for you.
Yeah.
Why did Vincent go to Europe?
He went to Amsterdam for 3 years.
3 years?
Just for a hash tour. I don't know. These guys clearly got money
yeah.
with the line of work they're in.
The fucking roles they're carrying around.
And I guess Marcellus was cool with him going for 3 years, or maybe he just started working for Marcellus. No, because he wouldn't.
No, he had been working for him before.
Yeah, I have no idea.
And so I
sabbatical.
That's crazy, though.
Yeah.
So 3 years in Amsterdam, and then he has that kind of money. He could have gotten out of the life.
Yeah.
But he must love the life, which is why he asked Sam Jackson later, "You're gonna get out of the life, man?
Hmm.
You know, why would you do that?" And so I think maybe that's where Vincent's questions about the philanthropic questions that Sam Jackson has. Is Vincent just did the whole go find yourself thing, and you can't escape it. And so we've talked about this. Why are you going to decide now that on some bullshit God intervention?
Yeah.
You're just going to come back to it.
You just deciding to be a bum. They got a word for that.
I think that Vincent had the same sort of experience, you know, let's say 3 years ago, and said, you know what? Fuck it. I'm going to go to Amsterdam and spend as long as I can there. And then realizes that he can't escape the life. He needs the heroin hit of working for Marcellus Wallace again.
Yeah.
And so I think he's telling Sam Jackson that you're just going to be right back.
Yeah. But are we to believe that they are two different sides of the same coin? Like, things don't turn out well for Travolta. Maybe he should have stayed in Amsterdam or quit the life.
There you go.
And like Sam Jackson came to his conclusion from the religious, you know, he witnessed a miracle.
Yeah.
So that's why he wants to go be the shepherd and try to find where he's needed, go on adventures. Maybe Travolta was just one of those like, hey, I got all this money. Like, I'm going to take a 3-year vacation and fuck off and, you know, use heroin and smoke hash or whatever and come back all chill. But like,
yeah,
he wasn't taking the good journey, you know, or walking the right path.
Uh-huh.
Like, it was still in his self-interest, whereas Sam Jackson maybe would have a different outcome. He'll probably just be a bum.
Okay.
Because, like, the life's good. It affords you those opportunities.
Great take.
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, like, Sam Jackson, like, is, you know, he's quoting scripture and definitely, like,
it's ingrained.
Emotionally, he's on a different level.
I agree. Another theory. Tony Rocky Horror was gay.
Who?
The man that got thrown four floors for touching...
Oh, for the foot massage.
For the foot massage.
Okay.
I think he's gay.
Hmm.
I wish we had met him, but I think that's the implication. Because he didn't do anything sexual with her.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it was just a handshake.
I want to talk about that whole scene. Because I know people joke around about Quentin Tarantino's foot fetish.
Okay. I was wondering if we were going to go there as well.
It appears in a lot of movies and, you know, naturally...
All the time.
You know, this is something we're all aware of now. Then you go back to a movie from 20 some years ago,
and
it's like, damn, like, we're getting a lot of screen time talking about foot massages. And it never struck me as odd initially, but that theme has been recurrent in Tarantino's movies.
Yep.
But it was, I don't know, it was still a really fun conversation. Like,
it's a great conversation.
What is it? Is it a, what's the ballpark? What's the line? Is it an intimate situation? Would you give a foot massage to a man? I'm not saying we got to unpack this.
Well, yeah. I don't know. It depends on the guy. Like, if my friend's in the hospital, I'll give him a foot massage, you know, yeah. And he got some foot ailment or something. That's fine.
Yeah.
I definitely think there is something intimate in a foot massage.
Agreed.
unless they're in the hospital.
Yeah. I love how Vega's line, that whole, like, I've given a million foot massages and they all meant something.
Mm-hmm.
We act like they don't, but...
They fucking do. She knows and I know.
Yeah.
That they do, yeah.
But again, just 5 minutes talking about nothing. Just, like, two dudes who are doing other shit that is relevant to this story. Just having a conversation that's pretty unrelated.
And they were going to go in and start their whole charade there. But he said, hold on, we're a little early. Let's hang back. Mm-hmm. And continued the fucking foot dialogue.
Yeah.
It's brilliant. I have another theory. I guess it's not really a theory, but did you notice what the lock code was on the box?
Yeah, let's talk about this.
Okay.
666.
It was 666.
So what do you read into it?
Fuck, I have no idea. I don't know. But I think it's something that also spurned Sam Jackson's Christian rebirth.
Mm.
Right? Because it's the devil in the box. There's something going on there that also is like, I don't need this. We just witnessed a miracle.
Why am I working for the devil?
Yes.
Essentially.
Yeah.
So that's my understanding. The popular rumor that people have unpacked from this is the combination is 666. The glowing object in the briefcase is Marcellus Wallace's soul. And the band-aid on his neck is the scar from where the devil took it, or something like that. Like, that was the popular opinion.
Oh, I've never heard that.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, well, now I'm going to blow it up.
Okay.
Because the directors and writers apparently said that band-aid was just to cover a scar that Ving Rhames, the actor, had on his neck.
Oh.
And they're just like, whatever you think is in the briefcase. Like, we didn't actually...
I hate that.
We didn't definitively decide what it was.
What do you think it was?
His soul.
Okay. I always just assumed gold.
Yeah, but like...
I don't know why they'd rob a gold Brinks truck or whatever, but...
Yeah, just a gold bar and a briefcase. Like, it doesn't add up as to why the Brett and the gang stole it or what the situation was where this thing got misplaced or why they had to hunt it down.
Well, maybe the devil, he can easily trick people who have less conviction, right? So maybe that's why he picked up these kids to do his dirty work to get Marcellus as Wallace's soul.
Because
I don't know why you'd pick up some kids to do this, to steal a soul, but...
Yeah. And what was the nature of it? They said, we're so sorry things got this fucked up with Mr. Wallace. What were... Did he outsource some job to them? Like, what was their connection to his operation that they were even in a position to steal his shit?
Yeah, it's definitely a robbery of some sort. So maybe they were stealing from the devil. I don't know.
It's a really interesting idea to have there, and not explain, because you do kind of give the audience liberty to interpret it as they want, but you give them enough to find that clear answer. But it's not important. It's just a MacGuffin.
It is important.
It's a MacGuffin in the clearest sense of the word.
I've never heard that.
MacGuffin is a generic term for, like, a holy grail. If you have a story in a movie, like, what's the thing that everyone's trying to get to? That's the MacGuffin. Whether it's like nuclear codes or the Holy Grail or something.
So
the briefcase is the MacGuffin. It's not important what it is. It's about the journey.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
I had no idea. I've never heard that before. On the topic of things I've never heard of before, can you tell me the difference between a Martin Lawrence and an Amos and Andy?
No.
Me either.
I was really, yeah. It's just, it's fun.
It was fun lines.
Weird style. I like the bloody as hell or burnt to a crisp.
I like that.
But when I was like, what would I pick? Because I don't fucking know what the difference is between those styles of milkshake.
Honestly, I would probably get both and give the other one to Vincent.
How much do you think $5 was in 94?
Did you look it up?
For a $5 milkshake? I don't know.
Hmm.
Now it doesn't. If it's good milkshake, like if it had some bourbon in it or something, $5 doesn't seem bad at all.
Not bad at all.
But I wonder in 90s money, is that like $10? Which, that might be a little steep for just...
That is very steep.
Ice cream.
Now, when I started working at 15, minimum wage was Let's say $6.
Oof.
Almost $7.
All right.
It had to have been 4-ish, right, in the 90s? Let's see. What do you think the value of it is?
I mean, at least I'd say like $10. I don't know how much... I know it's. I know the dollar's worth less now than it was 25 years ago.
It was $4.25 in 94, the minimum wage.
Oh, shit.
I bet it was delightful, though.
Oh, I'm sure.
I bet it was a good motherfucking milkshake.
I don't know if it's worth $5. It's a good fucking milkshake.
Yeah. did you have a favorite song?
There are so many. The soundtrack is amazing.
It's fucking awesome.
And with other Tarantino non-period pieces, he gets that liberty as well. I know Reservoir Dogs was popularized a lot of great songs.
The Steeler's Wheel.
Stuck in the Middle with You.
That band rocks, by the way. We discussed this before. I had never listened to any of their other shit, and they're very, like, folk psyche.
Yeah.
Just crazy hard and grungy almost from the 70s. Mm-hmm. It's just, yeah, just shocking. But yeah,
a bunch of cool dudes on drugs. And I know, I know I mentioned this to you before. Gary Rafferty from Steeler's Wheel made the unforgettable song Baker Street. Look it up, you'll know it.
Okay. That's a fine job.
Yeah.
We're going to listen to it after this.
Okay. So this is one of the few Oscar movies or famous director movies we did that was not a period piece.
Correct.
Granted, there is a certain style element to it, which I was trying to loosely connect to that sort of swing revival of the 90s, where like, hey, we're cool cats. We're using like daddy-o slang and wearing suits.
Okay. Have you seen Swingers?
Long time ago.
Okay. We should do that.
Anyway. But just that idea of like kind of making everything a little cooler and like throwback-y. Just for the fun of it.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was 90s specific.
Yeah, I'm running through words, and I mean quotes in my mind that are like that.
You know, Mia is really big on the,
the
kind of cool hipster?
Sure.
Beatnik?
Beatnik, maybe?
Yeah, that kind of slang.
I really liked the scene when, after Mia gets adrenaline shot and awake after ODing on the heroin, and she's wearing a shirt from probably that guy's house, and, she very reluctantly and kind of like sweetly, coyly goes, do you want to hear the joke? That was so pure, that scene.
Yeah.
It was so soft and so, I mean, just sweet. And, you know, I'm sure we've all had late nights, right? Probably not to that OD extent.
Yeah.
But that come up, that all of the bad things you did, ultimately, you're still a sweet person.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you still kind of want some sort of validation for things that you did in the past, or someone to like you at least.
Yeah. And, like, despite Vincent being an assassin and Mia being the mob boss's wife, this whole thing was just, I need a play date. Like, I need someone to hang out with and show me a good time, because I guess Marcellus is too busy, so even though one's a junkie, one's a mob boss wife, at the end, they were having a good night.
They were having a great night.
At the dance contest. Like, it was fun, but this awful fucking OD happens in the middle, and then it was nice to, like you're saying, the scene is sweet. You get to see them sort of come back to that, that they both had a good scare, but at their core, like, they like each other, and...
The come down, that's like, that was... The come down when you're dropping everyone off, you know, back to their home. There was no music. It was eerily just tangible. You could feel the come down coming through the screen.
And on that note of things being tangible, I love how so many scenes or acts of this movie take place in kind of real time.
Okay.
Just the date in general. You know, he shows up and you see her getting ready, spying on him. And then they go on the date. You get a real sense of just, I don't know, it felt like you were with them the whole time.
The whole date. Sure, yeah, I get it. Okay.
Until like,
from meeting to dropping off.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely.
And again, with like Butch's thing where he's hanging out with the, you know, with his girlfriend at the hotel and he's like, you forgot the fucking watch. And then you see
him. Fucking watch!
The one fucking thing I told her. Yeah. And then you see him driving to his place and you see him walking
in
the back the whole way. And just like, you're kind of with them the whole time. And it really...
There are distinct stories that you follow the whole way through.
Yeah. And it's not, it's one of those cases where the real time, sometimes you don't need to see people, you know, getting into the car and driving all the way to the place, but Tarantino has a way of putting you right on their timeline, following them every second of the way, and still making it mean something or build the tension towards that moment.
Yeah.
And like, those are the two. Even when Marcellus and Butch, you know, get kidnapped at the pawn shop.
Like, well, beginning with fucking Bruce running him over,
and yeah, then the wake which, up. Yeah, he like went to get his watch from the apartment. That was all real time, and then driving home, that was all real time.
Wow,
just the whole fucking thing. You're like, you're stuck with them, seeing these horrible things or hearing these horrible things unfold.
Yeah,
behind the scene, but like, there's something very, tangible, real, tangible. About presenting the scene that way when the stakes are so weird or high.
Yeah. Wow. That going back for the watch really resonates with me.
How so?
I got a handful of things that I would absolutely go back for.
Mm-hmm.
One of them's the dog who's asleep.
Aww.
that's a great take. I didn't really think about that. Mm-hmm. It's a movie that's jumbled up in time, but the stories you do get, you follow all the way through.
Yeah. Question for you. How did you feel about the way this movie was broken up into kind of non-chronological vignettes?
Oh, I've got no problems. I like it. It probably makes the story better because I'm waiting for that pumpkin and honey bunny scene.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, that's the, have you heard if you're writing a paper, if they don't hook you by the, you know, like the first five words, you know, it's probably not going to be good.
Yeah.
That topic sentence, if you will, of the movie, the first time I watched it, I was waiting for it the whole goddamn time. And you don't really get it until the very end.
Yeah. I mean, that's your bookend, is the pumpkin honey bunny stories.
Yeah. I'm okay with the breaking it up because you kind of get introduced to everyone early on. And I think it plays well into the fact that, you know, well, what the fuck's in the briefcase? You wonder that the whole time.
And you see how everyone is connected very early in the movie. So then when we branch off to explore the individual stories.
Yeah. You know, kind of where it's going, what's going on.
Yeah. That was interesting when you first meet Butch at the bar. Really great lighting in that scene. That long take of Marcellus Wallace talking.
Oh yeah, with the fucking red light on the side. Yeah. Absolutely.
Just a long shot of Bruce Willis barely reacting to Marcellus Wallace. Your ass goes down in the fifth. But when he goes to the bar, when Sam Jackson and Travolta come in, like, you know, dressed in Jimmy's dad Santa clothes, swimsuits or whatever. There's this moment where Travolta and Bruce Willis are at the bar. For a second, like, Sam Jackson's like, I gotta go piss, and they're sort of like, there's a bit of a standoff quality to it, where like they're kind of sizing each other up. I don't know if I'm reading into it too much, but I know this was something of a revival or a comeback for Travolta.
Oh, after Saturday Night Fever?
Like, in his lengthy career, he had, you know, Grease. Like Grease, Saturday Night Fever, he'd done all this great stuff and kind of had gone cold with getting awesome, you know, Oscar-worthy roles from great directors.
Yeah.
Even Bruce Willis, like, nothing against the guy, but he was kind of an action star, you know, he did his Die Hards and whatever. So for me, when I saw that scene, I was like, oh, these are like two dudes who were just like a little past their prime.
Okay.
But there's something winked to the audience to me about it. Just sort of like, hey, like, I'm making a comeback too. Like, yeah, we're both in this Tarantino movie. Like, we get to play really interesting, gritty characters and do really interesting shit.
Okay.
I don't know. That was just something that stood out to me. I was trying to place it, because I know this was huge for Travolta's career.
What came afterwards? Like, directly afterwards? Do you know?
I couldn't tell you. I feel like a lot of the 90s Travolta stuff wasn't as big. Like, there was, like, Michael and that movie where he gets a brain tumor from aliens and becomes really smart. Like,
my mom loved Michael growing up.
Yeah, and, like, rom-coms and stuff. Like, he wasn't playing, like, the young, sexy lead. It was, like, a different kind of character for him. These two guys, like, definitely both still relevant and around, but not in, like, a marquee. Mm-hmm. You know, these people are not being put in Oscar movies anymore.
True.
So this being one that did get nominated, that was heavily stylized, visionary, really unique take and characters, it was very fun to see.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, it reminds me, like, oh, yeah, these guys are great fucking actors.
True. True.
But, like, he's not doing Die Hard. He's not doing, you know, some 70s disco.
He's busy doing Hairspray.
Yeah.
So, are there any final things that we forgot about that you really want to touch on?
Just a couple things that touched me. It was smoking in a diner.
Oh, doesn't that look dope?
It takes Don't me you back. Wish that?
Man. You know, you can still smoke in Florida.
There's like, yeah, if you're not in a big city that's passed the no smoking indoors laws, yeah. there are still places.
Yeah.
And it almost would be like a vacation.
Like oh, yeah, man.
Go to a town with a Denny's you could just smoke in while you eat. It's
in India, you could smoke inside.
Nice.
Yeah, it was pretty dope sometimes. And then they had these cantaloupe cigarettes.
With like cantaloupe flavored leaves or something?
No. You know the Camel Crush ball?
Yeah.
So you pop the ball and some of them, there was one pack of cigarettes that had two balls in it. One was cantaloupe and one was mint.
Whoa.
And so you would pop it and you'd get this rush of cantaloupe flavor. It was fucking awesome.
So you can change and choose the flavor of your cigarette.
Yeah, you got regular tobacco. And I swear to God, the tobacco there tastes so much better than it does here.
Oh, I'm sure. You know, it doesn't have the Philip Morris trademark chemicals.
Exactly. And,
yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Just shocking shit. And we would go around getting chai teas and smoking cigarettes at fucking restaurants, coffee shops. Which makes me really excited about Thailand, is Thailand, allegedly, is one of the best coffee destinations. They grow all of their own beans there because of the climate.
Yeah.
And so it's a real microcosm of coffee. My plan is to bring you back a bag, because I think that's a good gift. Most times it's just tchotchkes, but this time I'm bringing back coffee.
Definitely.
Yeah.
That's awesome. What about you? Any like last final thoughts or things that stuck out to you?
I thought Fabian was really cute. I loved the tension of Bruce Willis unlocking his apartment door.
Mm-hmm.
The tension in that scene, you can fucking lick it off of the screen.
Even the shot of just the key going into that, it looked so strangely beautiful for some reason.
Anecdotally, I don't have them anymore, really, but I used to have these reoccurring dreams in my life that were, I had a key in my hand, and it's a dark background, and there's a door on the dark background, and all I see is the key in my hand, and I go to unlock the door, and I cannot unlock it. This was a dream that I had probably from like 15 to 25.
Interesting. So does the key go in, but it won't turn?
No, I literally miss the hole every time.
Oh.
I can't get the key into the fucking ignition.
Mm.
A different version of that dream for me was, you remember computer towers?
Mm-hmm.
I'd put a disc in, I'd press the button, put the disc in, press it to close it, and I'd be like, okay, cool. And then it would pop right back open.
Mm.
And then I would press it again and it would close. And I would think I got the satisfaction of it working, but it would pop back open.
Yeah. Similar theme in both. I'm sure a dream interpreter would tell you what that means. You know that dream where you lose your teeth?
Yeah, I have that dream.
They say that it's like you're getting older, and subconsciously that's
something
about like that's like the one example I know of dream interpretation. It's like common dreams people have.
I literally will get up and go brush my teeth and go back to bed. I had a root canal a couple years ago, and I have to like floss and brush my teeth anally.
Yeah. I have that one too. Mm-hmm. Like, if I close my mouth, my teeth will break or something.
Mm-hmm.
And then they always do. And I always think it's, like, really happening.
I think it's really happening.
Fuck, I'm glad I've taken care of my teeth.
Are you going to wiggle the tooth that just fell out? Do you have a final thing?
Just that I liked... I mean, obviously, I loved how realistic shit was. The conversations, everything was really kind of candid and irreverent. And two things that really stuck out to me. People using the bathroom. It's Vincent Vega's downfall.
Mm-hmm.
But it happens a lot. Like when
Jules goes, takes piss.
And then him and Butch are looking at each other. Yeah. Vincent, Mia goes to powder her nose. Mia goes to
the restroom.
Vincent goes to use the bathroom to talk to himself about, I've one drink and you fucking leave. And that's when Mia ODs.
Yeah. ODs, yep.
And he dies because he was in the bathroom when Butch comes back to his place.
Oh my God, yeah.
Yeah. It's like, it's just casually... peppered into the movie. And I know it's stupid to say I wish movies showed people going to the bathroom more, because it's realistic. It takes me out of a movie when no one's going to the bathroom. It's stupid. No one wants to see that.
Sure.
But
you're hyper observant.
I'm just an asshole, and I always think that. I'm like, no one's ever like getting unexpected phone calls or doing normal human everyday shit.
In Green Book, there's a lot of bathroom use, now that you're bringing this up.
Yeah.
Mahershala Ali goes, you know, I need to go use the restroom, and Viggo Mortensen's forced to take him somewhere to use the restroom, and he's like, why don't you just take a leak on the side of the road?
Oh, because of
just go take a leak. No, not because of that. No. Because he won't take a piss outside, because animals piss outside.
Interesting.
And Viggo's like, just take a leak. It's fine. Just go outside and do your business on the side of the road. It's okay. Which plays into other racial overtones, but we don't have the time to unpack all of that.
Yeah. I'm sure we'll pick a movie that we're dangerously underqualified to discuss again and go at it. Only other thing was when Butch hits Marcellus Wallace. Marcellus Wallace is like fucked up and like limping at him and like shooting at, and he fucking hits the witness.
Oh yeah.
Just, that's another thing. Like, movies glamorize gunplay so much, and I'm like, but really? No stray bullets? No innocent bystanders? And it absolutely happens. Yep. And I don't know. Like, yep. I appreciate shit not going the way it should. Because movies have really clear kind of story arcs. And, like, Fargo did it a lot, too, where shit just goes wrong.
Yeah.
And it's, like, fun, because that feels real, and then you got to see people deal with it.
I agree.
So I really, I don't know. This whole movie had a lot of shit that your average movie doesn't do, and maybe that's my favorite thing about Tarantino.
Okay. Yeah. I guess one last thing. I love the back and forth conversations left to right, if you will, where you see both people talking, but you get each of their responses together rather than a scene of them together talking. It's individuals switching back and forth.
I noticed
like
that.
Like Jackrabbit Slims is the best example.
Yeah.
Their conversation is fucking awesome, and it's because they're sitting across from each other and you're getting each side angle. Same with Jules and Vincent at the coffee shop.
Yeah, or in the car on their way to Brett's place.
Actually, most of the time, I think the only time is you get Honey Bunny and Pumpkin.
Mm.
That's a dual conversation at the same time.
Yeah.
Otherwise, there's limited focus on who's talking and who they're talking to. Those two quotes. This is going to be really hard for me to
not do accents. I'll go ahead and start it off.
Okay,
go ahead. Your favorite. It's not a date. It's definitely not a date.
Day jobs. What then? Not in this life.
My girlfriend's a vegetarian, which pretty much makes me a vegetarian.
You're Brett, right?
I'm gonna chew with my mouth closed and laugh at her fucking jokes, and that's it.
And your day's just about over, and that's a hard motherfucking fact of life.
Motherfuckers who thought their asses were gonna age like wine.
You looking at me, friend? I ain't looking at a friend, Palooka. I've never heard Palooka before.
Is that a derogatory term?
Not sure. If it is, I'm sorry.
It's like jabroni?
Yeah, that's what I think what that is.
All right. Which one's Trudy? The one with all the shit in her face?
That's my wife. Heroin is coming back in a big fucking way. And you know what? It fucking is.
It was in the 90s, too. Like,
I
was fucking 13, and kids in my school were ODing on heroin.
Like, Jesus Christ.
It was 90s. Yeah, I don't know what it was.
Jesus Christ.
It was coming back. It's like a wax museum with a pulse.
Disco.
I said, goddamn.
What's more chicken shit than fucking with a man's car?
When you little scamps get together, you're worse than a sewing circle.
Yeah. Go make yourself a drink and I'll be down in two shakes of a lamb's tail.
Are you talking to me on a cellular phone? Who is this? I don't know you. Prank caller.
I don't think Buddy Holly's much of a waiter.
Zed? Maynard. The spider caught a couple of flies.
All right. Who's Zed? Zed's dead. Zed's dead, baby.
I'm sorry, baby. I had to crash that Honda.
This is the Valley, Vincent.
How about you, Jimmy? You an oak man? Oak's nice.
That's cool in the gang. And we don't want to fuck up your shit.
You the motherfucker that should be on brain detail.
Sewer rat may taste like pumpkin pie, but I wouldn't know.
Come on, Yolanda. What's Fonzie like?
Yeah, actually, that's my last one.
All right. We have alternate titles.
Yes.
This is our new segment as well.
Yes, go ahead with yours.
Oral pleasure.
Wow, nice.
Because just a lot of good talking, and I really appreciated the scene of Butch and his lady agreeing to alternate oral sex on one another. It felt healthy.
You know, off the cuff, I'm going to say maybe Disco's dead.
Mm-hmm.
because it seems to have this like old throwback feel, but it's beyond disco.
Right.
Which happened.
Kind of like the fallout from that generation.
Yeah.
Of what comes after.
Yeah.
Oh, shit. Is that...
That's them.
Wait,
gotta go.
I have to go now. Excuse me.
Bands?
Bands. May I?
Sure.
Not necessarily 90s. Late 90s, but still counts. I went with The Hives.
Oh, okay.
Because if you have heard their music, there is... It's very... punky and kind of messy and dirty, but it harkens to an older style. It's as if someone took maybe music from the 60s and just punked it way the fuck up, because Quentin Tarantino's directing style is really flashy and in your face, and it's sort of not what you expect, but it feels familiar.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I went with.
I fucking like that.
I enjoyed it a lot back in the 2000s and such, but it struck me as an apt comparison.
Okay, yeah, this is the band that I'm thinking of. Garbage?
Oh, yeah. I'm a big fan of Garbage.
What's the name of that main song?
There are several.
I know, but like...
It's like Stupid Girl, I Think I'm Paranoid, Push
It.
I think it's
I Think I'm Paranoid.
Okay.
Fuck, I don't know. But like, just that juxtaposition of a high-pitched, sort of nonchalant, sort of female singer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one that has like that... The Smiths tongue-in-cheek sort of vibe. There's a brand of music that I call, like, heroin music.
Sure.
And it's like Sonic Youth. I was thinking Sonic Youth.
Okay.
But I think I'm choosing Garbage instead. But just that vibe, that the malaise.
Yeah.
You know, and the hate for the world, and yet they're still going to shoot the shit all the time.
Yeah.
Kind of vibe.
I think that's a great example, because there is a very subdued... darkness about it, but you know, Quentin's big about highlighting females, you know,
exactly,
and like Garbage is great for that. The music is like familiar but totally fucking weird and different.
Yeah,
like, just kind of what this director is. It's familiar but totally fucking weird and different, and I love it. Watch this movie if you haven't seen it.
Me too. Yeah, definitely watch it. If you made it this far, thank you for listening. I'm Zach.
I'm Wade,
and this has been
Stay Cool Forever.